This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Dan Green, can you feel it?
I can feel it all the way over here in Scotland. I can feel it.
All right. And I should note the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So I'm sorry, Joe Biden. You cannot use Freedom Fiends, but just about anybody else can. And the Queen of England cannot use it either.
She's
How are you doing, Dan?
I'm good, James.
It's great to be with you. And this is a global fiend network. As you mentioned, you're in Scotland. I am bouncing my Intergalactic Prairie Studios via Southwest Harbor, Maine. So great to be with you, convening over Fiend Phone.
Nice way to plug the software right in the start there. I like that.
makes it all possible. Makes it all go round. And in fact, I just this past weekend got to hang out with Derek Slopey, the programmer of Fiend Phone.
Oh, did you?
It's pretty cool dude. Pretty smart too.
That's pretty cool. So, James, we were kind of talking a little bit before we got started. I think we were talking about football stadiums and what maybe I would call soccer and what maybe you would call football, if you want to put it that way. But, you know, clearly, if we're looking at this, I'm sorry to my American listeners, but let's face it, in one of them you use your feet all the time, and the other one you don't, so it's kind of clear which one we should call football.
I'm not going to argue with that. There's logic there, and I think that's fine. And you know, I think you also use your head in your kind of football, and there's not much of that going on in our kind of football. So, look, when you guys go to a big soccer, or you know, I'm going to call it a soccer game because that's just what I call it. But when you go to a big game. Do they, like, here, this has become this, like, super nationalist, like, tribute to the government before a big game. Is there something like that over there?
Oh, do you mean, like, a kind of singing the national anthem sort of thing?
It used to be just the national anthem. Mm-hmm. Now, they actually bring out a 300-foot flag onto the field. And sometimes they even have like military planes fly overhead to just, you know, and then they come on the loudspeaker and, you know, salute the troops kind of a moment, like extremely nationalistic, has been merged with the big sporting events. So I don't know if that's, do they salute the Queen or what do they do over there?
Well, it's kind of interesting because I've noticed kind of what you say. I mean, like, I've been to one or two sort of sporting things when I've visited the US, and I've kind of seen this what seemed to be quite sort of, like you said, really nationalistic and kind of weirdly hyper-militaristic. I didn't know about planes flying overhead and stuff. It's funny because, I mean, right, if you go to like a Scotland international game, like we'll stick calling it soccer, if you go to one of them, you know, you'll get someone coming out and singing the national anthem beforehand, but it's usually everyone just going like that for a while. But at normal kind of like games, I mean, like, say, I used to go to soccer games and I supported a team called Celtic, and Celtic are more associated with sort of the Irish and like they're sort of being like sort of anti-UK and well sort of, you know, anti-unionist, if you want to put it that way, it's just that's kind of broad strokes, but like that's kind of how they're viewed generally. So like you wouldn't get like, say for example, a Union Jack flying in Celtic Stadium. That just wouldn't happen. Their fans would go crazy. So you would never get like, you know, you would never get anything that's involving the British military, you know, at a Celtic game. Because, I mean, pretty much most of the fans there are highly opposed to the British military. So if they started parading around, then people would get really upset in a big way. But on the other side of that is the other team in Glasgow are called Rangers, and they're, you know, proportionately very pro-monarchy. So I know that they do stuff. I think they do stuff for military charities and that, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, but I think they're more nationalistic, say, in that way. Although when you go to a Celtic game, you get lots of people singing the Irish national anthem, but if you actually count how many of those guys have been to Ireland, a lot of the time it's very few and far between, you know.
Interesting.
But it's a different dynamic, I think.
But the crowds are pretty substantial, right? How big are the stadiums we're talking about over there?
Celtic Park was about, I know that the National Stadium was about 57,000, I think. That's smaller than Celtic Park's, more than that. I can't remember how many. As I used to know that, actually, when I used to go. But it's, I mean, it's the national big sport. So, yeah, it's a big deal. It is the national sport here. It's, you know, it's what people are into. And people take it very, very seriously here. I mean, like, politics, I've talked about this a little bit before, politics and religion and all that gets dragged into it here, and it becomes sort of part of people's identity, if you want to put it that way. You know, there's us and them, you know, and like, because they mix other things into it. So say like, I'm being like a Celtic guy and I'm saying like, oh, well, because, you know, I'm a Celtic fan and I'm a Catholic and I support the IRA and, you know, like this is the way they would go on. Like, you know, but that's different from them. They love the Queen and they support the British Army and, you know, like, and they're Protestants and it's that kind of thing. So it becomes this, especially in one city, because in some football and rivalries, you know, like I know in America, you get rivalries between states and between cities and things. Here, you do get that, but the problem we've got in Glasgow is that the two teams are in the one city, so everyone's all lumped in together in the one place, which makes it a bit more volatile.
That sounds interesting, though. But at least there's like something at stake, right? Besides just some kind of abstract regional pride that's like, that's the team that's near my house. I must love them. You know, like... No, my team's better because I live near them. No, I'm closer to this team. So I never really understood how that works, but as long as people are having fun, I love it. I'm not a big sports fan myself, but I love seeing people have fun. You know, something though that does really the nationalism really creeps me out when I see some of these sporting events on TV. I mean, the U.S. government is so, they're just so into their propaganda. And so many people love sports that it's just like they need to insert their product into this thing. I mean, this is the number one product placement. Forget about Budweiser. It's the U.S. military. Even when I go to smaller sporting events, the U.S. Army has always got a booth somewhere. They're always working. It could be drag races, could be football. It doesn't matter. They're totally into that. But these stadiums, they it's a real racket over here, and I don't know how it is over there, but these sports teams make tons of money. I mean, there's owners that are worth billions of dollars and they're making all kinds of cash, and but yet they go to these city and state governments and say, we think you should buy our our stadiums. It's pretty sad, really sad. But they end up spending hundreds of millions of dollars per stadium. Is there anything similar to that over there?
See, I was trying to find some things about this, but it's not easily forthcoming. It's not the kind of thing we hear about. When we hear about costs associated with football, it's usually to do with, you know, the cost of the National Health Service having to patch up all the people who got beaten up after the game the week before. You know,
that's because you guys are tough, man.
Or stupid. Probably more stupid. Like, honestly, I've heard of people getting stabbed because they were wearing the wrong football top. I mean, what kind of insanity is that?
There's some weird psychology going on there, isn't there? And it is, I mean, sports rivalries are sort of nationalistic on their own. It's this, these weird arbitrary loyalties, and they can go that far. Now, when somebody's getting stabbed for wearing the wrong jersey, is that because they like the wrong team or because they're also assumed to be perhaps supporting the monarchy or they're Catholic or some things that go along with that? What would really be the source of that?
See, I think it could be either. I know that sometimes I've heard people say, like, I remember being in, I used to drink in some a lot rougher pubs than I would now, and I remember after games people going, let's go out and find one of them. And it's like almost like all, for some reason, from what I've noticed from a lot of people, all the anger they have in their life, they find it easy to concentrate it into football, you know, because if you're at a stadium or in a pub watching a game, you can be shouting and bawling and screaming and stuff, and they seem to use it to channel all their anger for some reason. And then in the same way, I think when a lot of these things happen, there are people who are angry because it's not even just like, say, their team lose, but they take it personally. And I know what that's like, because I'm not really, I don't bother with it anymore. But when I used to be into football, I used to take it quite personally when we lost. But you'd get annoyed with the other side for some reason. I never went out beating people up or anything. I never did that. But
sure, you're tempted to stab people, but you refrain usually.
That's just because I'm Scottish. That's a natural impulse for a Scottish person, it seems. It's deeply ingrained. But no, I do think that they do just use this as a way to like channel all their anger into it. It's like an outlet for something, and I kind of see that a lot. And I think that sometimes it doesn't even matter who the person is. Sometimes they just want to almost find somebody to blame and take their anger out on. And then if it's someone in what's perceived to be the other group, then it's fine because it's them, not us, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, there's some weird psychology there. You know, you sort of see some parallels in other areas. We'll have to explore that more. But I believe right now we're going to take a trip to the market. So when we come back, we'll have more Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
The Freedom Fiends, I'm Dan Green, and I'm here talking to James Babb. And the first segment there, we're talking a bit about sort of sports and sort of some of the differences. And here's what I was kind of thinking about, James. I was thinking about, like, how I was explaining, like, here how, you know, sports are largely tied up with, you know, like, people's sort of religious identity, you know, political beliefs, even you could say ethnic identity, you know, national identity is probably a better way to put it. Do you have that so much in the US? Because I remember, like, I've been to, like, one or two, like, albeit kind of smaller games, in places like Canada and, like, one in Florida, and, like, I noticed that, you know, fans weren't segregated or anything. Fans, and by segregated, I just mean separated from each other. Because here, you know, like, you have lines of police between each set of fans for each team, but I noticed that wasn't there so much. I mean, is that kind of more of a European thing, or do you have that kind of thing similar to that with sports?
Well, you know, I don't think that it's come to the point where you need barbed wire fences between the two groups of fans. but the The rivalries are just so arbitrary that it's usually like, okay, most of those guys sit on that side of the stadium and most of the other team's fans sits on the other side. But, you know, like if somebody's got the wrong color jersey on, they might be there, but, you know, they might also get like, you know, hit with ice or something from a few rows back. Like, it's not like they might not get treated the best. But it's pretty funny.
I know, because it always just seems like it's, for some reason, football's kind of, football in Europe, say soccer in Europe, let's for clarity, it always seems like it's, you know, deservedly got this reputation, because you'd even say, you know, it's not great here, but if you even go into Europe, I mean, like mainland Europe, it gets worse. You know, like Italy, and Rome, there's two teams in Rome, Roma and Lazio, that don't like each other, and their games are notorious. My brother went to one of those games, and he said he couldn't even focus on the football because of like all the other stuff that was going on around him, people getting dragged out of rows and throwing flares and jumping on fences and stuff. He said it was just insanity. And you have it all over Europe, you know. You have problems in Poland with like some teams that have fans that are like, you know, neo-Nazis and things like this. It depends where you go, and it's something different, but I don't know what it is. But like I said, we were talking about the psychology. The only thing I can think of is it's just a way for a lot of young men to sort of funnel all their aggression, you know.
Well, into, you know, something. And it's something weird. You know, like not that long ago, we had a lot of big riots in like Ferguson, Missouri, over police protests and stuff. And anyway, so they do this rioting, and it was kind of a big deal. I mean, it was in the news all the time over here. But a lot of people made the sort of comparisons of like, hey, you know, when black people are rioting about police abuse, you know, everybody freaks out. But meanwhile, like there might be a sporting riot. And it's just, oh, those, you know, boys will be boys, you know, and they're like burning cars. And I just Googled sports riots just to see. And I saw this headline, 10 of the most costly sports riots in history came up. Mm-hmm. Super Bowl. This is a Super Bowl in 2006. Pittsburgh Steelers versus Arizona Cardinals. There was a riot that did $150,000 in damages. Just people having fun or being mad because their team lost or something. I don't know. You know, like.
See, that's the other thing that I notice here. We don't so much have like riots like that. Riots don't happen very often, almost never, especially in Scotland. I mean, you do get the occasional riot down south or whatever in England, but not so much here. And like football fans aren't known for like, you know, looting and rampaging in that way here. I mean, they are known for big groups of them, you know, squaring up to each other. Like that happens, but it's usually they direct their violence towards each other as opposed to, you know, random businesses.
Right. Here it's just senseless violence with no purpose. They're at least mad at somebody, not just like, let's flip some cars over, woohoo!
I actually remember I saw pictures of a riot, and I actually think it was a hockey riot. I think it was Vancouver Canucks fans, and there was like people posing beside like burning police cars, actually with their faces out, you know, just posing and smiling, and you're like, yeah, that's not going to come back and haunt you in a couple of days.
Not that I'm saying it's a bad thing to pose with a burning police car, you know, that's, I would definitely take that picture.
Not the most intelligent, though, if you want to evade the police.
Worms.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's MIPLC.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
This is the Freedom Fiends. Back with you, the Global Fiend Network. This is Jim Babb, and I'm here with Dan Green, coming in from Scotland.
Yeah.
Where were we, Dan? We're having some fun talking about sports.
We're talking about sports rioting, particularly hockey. Well, we mentioned a hockey riot or two. I'm surprised by hockey. I mean, even as sometimes as aggressive as football can get, I mean, if you behave like a hockey player does, like as in the way they, you know, punch each other about and stuff, man, you'd get banned. Like, it's really aggressive.
Right, and that's just part of the game, right? But yeah, there was one of these. I'm looking at some of these like interesting sports riots. Stanley Cup 2011. This was the Boston Bruins versus Vancouver Canucks. 4.8 million in damages. And I'm looking at a picture of a guy taking a selfie in front of like a burning car. And I mean, it looks like a war zone, but everybody's like, yeah, yeah, woohoo, it's a war zone. Yeah. I mean, I hate to laugh, but you know what? I guess if you're a Keynesian, this is the stimulus they're talking about, right? This is what they're like, this is a good thing, right? It's like, you know, if you believe in the broken window fallacy, man, they're doing a good job.
And that's what it's like. And we were talking as well about like the kind of the psychology, and it's weird when like even mob mentality takes over. It's like you would do things that you normally wouldn't do, you know. And I'm not saying that I was ever like rioted. I never rioted or anything, but I know what it's like. See, when you're in a big group of people like that, and they're sort of like, again, it's the us and them, but the them are just over there, and you're all over here, and you really, that's weird, man. You really get whipped up into it, and you start to become a part of it. It's like mass hysteria, I suppose, is probably the best way.
It's kind of like voting. I think that like sort of explains like the entire electoral system in the U.S. I think that you just nailed it.
That's what it's like, isn't it? Because you're all whipped up in emotion, and you sort of ignore the facts a bit, and you know, you let the emotion take over. And it's the same. How often do politicians try and do that? You know, only when they're awake. You know, it's like all the time.
But I mean, right? I'm sure you know you have friends. I know I have friends that get really whipped up about politics. I mean, like a Democrat versus Republican. They're like, they get just furiously mad at somebody on the who wears the other color jersey, you know, and but yet they're like, gee, what are you arguing over, you know, some incredibly minor micro difference you might be able to find between the two parties here. So same mentality though. And if we could sort of crack this, you know, maybe we could solve the problem.
But isn't that just some people might just say it's just a human problem. It's just that for some reason, because we are pack animals, we can get influenced so easily by so many other, you know, so many other humans, you know, feeding the lines down our throats. Because, I mean, a lot of the divides that are here exist because people grew up that way, you know. They grew up being told that this is how it is. You're that kind of person, they're that kind of person, you know. And, like, it seems like it starts early because, you know, if you've got parents who have been indoctrinated into one thing, they'll continue to go down the line. And I don't know if that's just a human thing, you know, because, like, we like to be in packs. Because I think as well, part of like the thing about maybe being part of anything, like, you know, a fan of a sports team, is some people like that collective identity. They like wearing the same jerseys as all these other people and feeling like they're all on the same side as them. You know, it's almost like a way to connect with more people almost.
Sure. And it's very personal. Like they'll say, we won the Super Bowl, or, you know, we won. Like, what did you do? You're I guess you're cheering, you know, from the bar. Really made a difference there. Good job, you know.
Although I said this once before, and I will say it again, there is a defense for that. And the defense for that is that you could say that the team, the players and the team constantly change. But you could say that they're just the players at that time. You could make the argument that the team who's always there are the fans, because they're the ones who keep the team going. Without them, there's no team, because nobody would show up. There'd be no money. So some people do make that argument, and I can kind of see where they're coming from, to be fair.
I think the taxpayers get more of that credit around here than even the fans do, because without the taxpayers, the tax victims, they're not paying. They're being taken. The money's being taken from them. The tax victims are on the hook over here. So maybe they hey, we got robbed for the stadium, for that stadium. Yay, we have something in common, right?
and we're good.
Right.
It is for the greater good.
Is that the sound of the central scrutinizer?
I've said too much. I must go.
I see what we've got to put up with here?
constantly monitored and surveilled. But I'm looking at a good one from... This is the... Liverpool versus Nottingham Forest. There's a Nottingham Forest team still. How about that?
Oh, yeah. All right.
I thought like Robin Hood, like, anyway. this stadium had to be completely renovated. Okay, this was 1989. It just says incalculable damage. The entire stadium had to be renovated for $35 million. It was so...
Man, that's, I'm not surprised.
Just imagine all that economic stimulus, all those broken windows. Oh, man. Everybody must have been so rich after that. That's exciting. I feel you're so lucky.
And that's the kind of thing. Do you know that in stadiums here at football games, you're not allowed to sell alcohol? Believe it or not, like that law was passed here a long time ago, before I started going to football games. It's been because there's been so many like disasters and things. I mean, there's been
cause a riot in itself here. Like they could try that, but that's not going to fly here.
Well, people have gotten used to it, and you know the pubs are always full before the games. So like you know, but it's a rule they've brought in, and it's a rule they've kept up. I mean, even though some people have questioned whether it's really necessary, it's more of, I mean, for some reason, we get so many authoritarian policies passed in this country and people just accept it. You know, it's unbelievable what people put up with here. I mean, they banned air rifles pretty much. I think you need to get a license or something now. You know, air rifles, not even actual guns.
Toy guns. Well, there's plenty of toy gun bans over here. Seriously, people are like, we got to do something about gun violence. Well, what are we going to do? I don't know. How about plastic toy guns? Is that a problem? Sure. Why not? I have a friend in New York City. His name's Jim Lazinski. And Jim's a really cool libertarian, and he's very creative. And this is more than a few years ago now, but maybe 10 years ago, they, in Manhattan, they were banning toy guns. Okay. So Jim's like, you know, this doesn't really sit well with me and his libertarian friends. So they provided a toy gun giveaway where they went into like a neighborhood, you know, like an urban neighborhood, and they passed out toy guns to the children in protest to this. Which I think was brilliant. They got a lot of media coverage. Not exactly a positive spin on it, but it was hilarious. And their other successful event around that time was the Great Cigarette Giveaway. So,
what was that?
Well, because they were trying to ban smoking, so they gave away cigarettes just to, you know, just to make fun of the people that are trying to ban stuff. I mean, New York's trying to ban. They tried to ban sodas that were too big a couple years ago. I think that actually got fought. They're like the Mayor Bloomberg at the time. He's like, I don't know. You know, I don't know if we can allow sodas over 32 ounces. That's crazy. That's ban it. Ban everything.
It's like the other thing here is I actually think they only do it for legal reasons, but like you're only allowed to say buy so much paracetamol that's like, you know, like a painkiller, just an over-the-counter one. You can only buy so much in each pharmacy in case you kill yourself with it, but there's nothing to stop you from buying a packet in this one, then across the road buying a packet there, buying a packet there, packet there, packet there, until you've got as many as you want. So it just seems like a kind of bizarre rule, unless it's just a legal thing, but I don't understand why.
Well, you know, maybe if it is, and it's suicide is the justification for that, people would commit suicide too much.
Yeah, aye. If they could go into one pharmacy and buy like five packs, they would be more likely to kill themselves for some reason, although it doesn't stop you from going to several pharmacies and buying as many packs as you like.
Well, I mean, literally, if I had to go to like 8 or 10 pharmacies, that alone would make me want to kill myself. Like, I hate those places.
You'd be really on the way by that point. You'd be like, yeah. When you got to the 7th pharmacy, you'd be like, I'm going to so do this now.
Right. If I was a little bit depressed ahead of time, that would just put me over the edge.
Maybe that's what they're thinking.
I don't know. But weren't you telling me that certain songs are banned where you are? Yeah. They're like, it would just be too crazy if people could sing whatever they wanted.
Oh yeah, it's called the Offensive Behavior at Football and Threatening Communications Act. That's what it's officially called. And it basically, I mean, it's because like you get a lot of people singing, say, pro-IRA songs or something at some games, or you know, anti-IRA songs or whatever, and they want to stop people doing that because, you know, apparently you're not allowed to sing things. But it's gotten a bit more ridiculous. I mean, there was actually an incident I've read at a stadium where this guy was wearing a Free Palestine t-shirt, right? And
okay.
he was questioned by police about that under this act, under this offensive behavior and threatening communications bill.
What was the question that they needed? What was the information they needed to find out from this guy? Like, looks like you're wearing a shirt. What's that about?
That's what it's like. I don't like what's on your shirt. You know, like, so? I mean, see, when it goes that far, what are you supposed to do? You know what I mean? Like, it seems like it's just a way, like a covert way to ban free speech, because what they do is they take examples of, you know, violence that's happened in the past that's been to do with football and go, and we're trying to end this violence, and people go, that's great. And that's maybe a noble thing to think of. But then what they're doing is they're just using that as a cover to basically clamp down on people's free speech. I mean, that's all it is.
Right, well, and you come up with a whole new reason to arrest people, right? And,
yeah,
you know, and, you know, this might catch on over here. I luckily, the Freedom Fiends is protected by the BIPCOT no government license, because if anyone from the government is listening right now, you have to turn this off. You're not allowed to use what I say. But, you know, because weed is getting legal here, they might need a new way to fill the prisons.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
I'm Dan Green, here with James Babb, and we've been talking about a lot of different things. I was mentioning a bit before about how in Scotland now they have found it necessary in their governmental wisdom to ban people from singing certain songs because, you know, I actually found a quote from a Scottish National Party politician here. He's a member of Parliament. He's a guy called John Mason, and he actually said, "We should all know by now, expressing political views is no longer acceptable at football matches." I mean, really?
Or maybe it's expressing football views at political matches also should be, you know, inappropriate, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's just scary. That's like, you're not permitted to express your views there, citizen. Please move along, you know.
Not until you have some better views. Until your views are improved, they're banned. But I got ranting about this and just talked right over the last break. But what I was thinking was, man, I hope our politicians don't find out about that, because as weed is getting legal here, they need to stuff the jail somehow. Mm. Maybe a whole new like class of crimes based on what songs people are caught singing, right? And and what could be the next step, right? Those types of paintings are also banned. I'm sorry. No, watercolors? Whoa. That could be anarchy.
Yeah, where does it end? That's the thing. I mean, you're right. It starts with, you know, like, and the whole idea of outlawing songs just, I mean, you can't even, it's not even just at football games. Like, there used to be pubs here would have nights, whether you agree with it or not, but they would have bands on that would say, express maybe like pro-IRA sentiment and through the majesty of song, if you want to put it that way. But now that's just, if they catch you doing that, you'll be fined, you'll be stopped, you'll be shut down. It doesn't happen, you're not allowed to do it anymore. So it just shows again, I mean, surely if you're in a private place that someone, you know, privately owns, the government shouldn't be taking any opinion of what kind of things going on in there. Because just because there might be a lot of songs that maybe whip up a lot of anger and that kind of sentiment, it does not mean that everyone is going to go out of that pub and go and kill someone.
Certainly right, and isn't. Let's keep in mind that this is a country where bagpipe playing is still legal, right? Is it even encouraged?
Not by me. Here's some people and they get married and they go, oh, we've got to have a piper at our wedding. We've got to get a piper, a wee bit of pipe, bit of bagpipes, but I don't know why.
Just to scare people away, or it's that time at the end of the night when you need to clear the hall or you pay overtime. Like, it's a good time for bagpipes, right?
Or to wake you up in the morning, maybe. I don't know why nobody uses them for that purpose.
But were the bagpipes sort of designed to sort of scare the enemy in battle? It's not like, it's not supposed to be pretty, right?
I don't think so. I'm not really sure. I don't really know that much about it as an instrument. It's just, it's never interested me. It always just bores me a bit. I mean, I've heard it used within certain kind of punk bands to good effect, but on its own, it's just, nah, I've never been a bagpipe fan.
I heard a piper tonight at sunset. I was at this beautiful mountain, Cadillac Mountain, here in Maine, and as the sun went down, you know, we're all watching this beautiful sunset, and I'm like, what is that? Dang it, somebody's playing bagpipes. Somebody said, this is a good time to do some piping out here, and he finished, and he actually got a round of applause, so people seem to like it. So who am I to criticize?
To be fair, it's a difficult instrument to play. I mean, I know that. I know that you need a lot of wind to be able to play it, you know, and it makes a lot of people dizzy.
Okay, all right.
Let's give them something, right? Let's give bagpipe players something.
they've got some strong lungs, but I don't know.
Other wind instruments. Other wind instruments are available.
Worms. Like kazoo. They could switch to kazoo.
Let's buy every bagpipe player a kazoo. We're starting a Kickstarter campaign. Kazoos for bagpipes.
No banjos. Definitely no banjos.
Oh, come on.
Stop racially oppressing me.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Libertarian Re-Education Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibPer 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows your use by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. My name is Dan Green. I'm here with James Babb for Hour 2. We mentioned the start of our Indiegogo campaign just before the break, kazoos for bagpipes. We aim to stop the scourge that is bagpipe playing on the world by buying a kazoo for every bagpipe player. And that was inspired coming up with the kazoo, James, because they're very cheap, so I feel like it's more achievable now. I'm glad we didn't say something like harps for bagpipes, or else we'd be in a lot of trouble just now.
But are we really moving forward if every bagpipe was replaced with a kazoo? I'm not sure. At least it's not a banjo. So, okay.
We could break them easier, right? They're only plastic, those things. It's fine.
In Philadelphia, well, banjos are so hated in Philadelphia that park police actually will beat you up for playing banjo in the park. I've seen it happen to a woman. They're like, "You're playing banjo here?" And they tackled her, like pulled her hair, dragged her out of there kicking and screaming. It was horrible.
What is wrong with the banjo? Honestly, I'm not joking. What's wrong with the banjo? I don't think.
No, it's there's nothing wrong with the banjo as an instrument. It's a perfectly fine instrument. It's the terrible folk music that people try to play on it that's offensive. So,
fair enough. I play the mandolin, but that's a less offensive instrument because unless it's like plugged into an amplifier, you can hardly hear the thing. So,
okay. Actually, the real banjo music, which would be bluegrass, it can be incredible. Okay. Now that is its proper genre. When somebody is a mean bluegrass banjo player, they can tear it up and it can be great. It's these folk people that have really given banjo a bad name. So.
So we're going to find something else for them. Banjo lessons for bad banjo players. That's another Indiegogo. It's going to be too many of them. We're not going to be able to keep up.
What? Let's just start banning stuff. Come on. I think, you know, you start to figure out, like, you know, maybe we should just ban a bunch of stuff, right? Like, you can see where that mentality would come from when people struggle with this voluntary solution to get rid of a scourge, and that it's just too hard. You just say, "Oh, just ban it."
But then sometimes that can even be, I don't know what you mean, like, but then sometimes that can even end up being more hassle in the long run, because then they have to set terms of how they're banning things, and they have to find people who are bringing the banned thing in, and then they have to jail them. But I suppose it gives the police something to do. So, you know,
it's a make work program. It's just more stimulus. It's just stimulus.
Kind of is, though. It's so true. I mean, like, even see the kind of craziness of the mentality of it, because we were talking about in the first half of the show about this, how like certain songs are banned in Scottish football stadiums. And one of the guys that was in the party, one of the politicians in the party that actually put that ban into place, was defending it. And now, his party were in favour of an independent Scotland. So when someone said to him, "Does that mean someone with a yes for independence badge goes into a football game with that, he should be questioned by the police?" And the guy went, yes, he should. They're his own supporters. So he thinks his own supporters should be questioned by the police for expressing that support.
He should be just trying to cover his behind and act like, you know, he was consistent. But you know that would not be enforced that way.
Well, probably. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if it was, to be honest.
But, you know, speaking of make work programs and sports, these stadiums, I've been doing some research on what people are being extorted for these stadiums. We're talking like, you know, sometimes $300 million of tax victim money is going into this stuff. There's a study, the past 10 years, or over a 10-year period in the U.S., $15 billion was forcibly extracted from working productive Americans to subsidize these stadiums. Okay, stadiums where businesses are operating, making so much money. One of the owners, okay, for instance, the Detroit Red Wings. Okay, and I first heard about this from John Oliver's has a great video out. He just did a great rant about sports stadium funding. the public was they authorized $280 million of tax victim money to go to a new Red Wing stadium 6 days after the city of Detroit went bankrupt. How about that?
Oh, man. That would be so
the angry. Owner, get this, the owner of that team is worth $5.1 billion. Oh. Okay? And he's going to the poor schmucks of Detroit and saying, hey, you know, we need some government in here to force you to pay me because I'm not rich enough and you're not broke enough. That's the way I interpret it.
Well, that's the way it looks, and that's really awful. I mean, like, I can't even find any kind of anything to do with that in this country, but like, I would be so annoyed with that. I mean, it's unbelievable, but like, we have sort of different problems here, like, because I mean, a lot of football teams are running massive debts, you know, if we're relating all back to economics again. They're as bad as the governments themselves because they're running huge debts, most of them. I mean, there's been certain teams that have actually gone under, they've gone into liquidation. Even the big team I was talking about, Rangers, that got put down three leagues lower because it had ran into so many financial troubles.
But aren't the Rangers, weren't the Rangers the pro royalty?
Yep.
Like, do I have that right?
Yep, correct, yeah.
Well, why didn't the Queen just, like, drop one of her jewels on them or something? Like, couldn't she just, like, pry one out of her scepter and like, drop it on their heads and be like, now be off with you?
Well, we're about to have a wee lesson for Rangers fans here, and that is the Queen, regardless of what you think, the Queen doesn't care about you. I'm sorry, she doesn't. She could not care less.
She's not at home watching the game.
I severely doubt that. You know, it's the thing. Doesn't matter. She's not caring. I mean, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs were the ones apparently who were coming after them for, you know, tax money and things like this. So she didn't do them many favors then. Neither did the British Broadcasting Corporation or the BBC, who they then accused over and over again of bias against them. So all these national institutions didn't really come for them.
Well, you know, that just shows that, you know what, you suck up to these people and it never pays off, right? Like, yeah. It's just embarrassing. It's just totally embarrassing, and you're not going to get anything back from it. It is like, remember we were talking about how hyper-militarized the NFL games are here with the yeah. jet flyovers and 300-foot flags and salutes and troops and all this tanks and, you know, they fire off nuclear missiles, you know. I heard Obama is working in his latest budget, he's trying to get rid of federal tax deductions for these municipal bonds that the stadiums are all, like, how they borrow their money. Okay, it's a big tax thing. Obama's thinking he can put an extra like $500 billion in the federal budget by taking away this revenue stream, you know, or taking away the tax advantage of municipal bonds. Does that make any sense?
It does. Yeah, that's interesting.
He doesn't care.
Yeah, why would he?
Well, he doesn't care about the veterans from his own wars. Why would he care what happens to these sports stadiums that are, you know, busy, you know, saluting him with 300-foot flags?
Oh, exactly. And I've always viewed the kind of American militarism, like this kind of militarism I've seen, like I view it as being kind of sort of odd. Like, you know, I'll sort of watch things on TV that are maybe, you know, taking place in America, sporting things or whatever. I've seen them for years, and I'm always surprised about how into it people are. And, you know, even like, you know, you have people there who are really upset if you stamp on a flag or something like that. It's not so much of a big, there were some people that probably be annoyed here, but it's not in the same sort of league. Do you know what I mean? Like, I even remember going to Florida and seeing all these "We support our troops" stickers on cars everywhere, and that kind of surprised me, because you just don't see that. Well, not in Scotland anyway, definitely not in Glasgow. I don't see anything like that at all. I mean, some smaller places in England, but not even in the big cities in England have I seen that kind of thing here. It's just a kind of culture that we don't seem to have for some reason. You know, there is people that, you know, there's movements of people that are very nationalistic and stuff like that, but it's just not the same at all. It's so different. And I've always viewed it as being kind of weird. Even like the Pledge of Allegiance thing in school and that, I've always thought that's strange.
It's creepy. It's downright creepy. Here, let's put little children in a room and make them say a prayer to the government, like before they're even old enough to even understand any of the words that are in it. Just get them repeating the mantra of allegiance. Like, whoa.
It's almost like, did the Soviets not do stuff like that? Did they not like, did they not replace sort of religious, like sort of coming of age things with like state things? It was like state ceremonies and stuff like that. I can't remember what they were called. I remember reading about that once.
It sounds believable, but here, basically here, the state has become the religion. I mean, there's even a church not far from where I am right now. We call it the Church of the Giant Flag. It's a church, but they have this like oversized flagpole that's so big it just like dwarfs the entire neighborhood. Okay, it's like it casts a shadow like across 10 houses. Okay, like. They're like, you know, like, gee, I wonder who their god is. Okay.
Well, actually, we literally have the state churches here, because you've got the Church of Scotland, the Church of England, which the Queen is head of for some reason. I don't know why, but like, so we have that. And then in Parliament, you've got the House of Commons, where the members of Parliament sit, but you've got the House of Lords, this bizarre unelected throwback to, you know, the medieval times. And you have, I can't remember how many, there's so many bishops from like the Church of England that have permanent seats in there, and that affects the making of law and things. So we have a state church.
Do they still use the words divine right of kings? Is that still thrown around?
It doesn't come up much in, you know, normal conversation, but I do believe they believe it.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Freedom Fiends. Back with Dan Green, and I'm Jim Babb. Dan.
Hi.
It's okay. In Scotland. Beaming across the phenosphere.
Feeding across the fjords.
The fjords.
The phenords.
I thought we were all in one giant studio that stretched across an ocean.
Exactly. That's right. It's actually far larger than one planet.
That was always my impression.
You know, Dan, something I've been meaning to ask you is how you got involved with the Freedom Fiends, how you sort of got involved with all these like weird liberty people or anarchists, or how did you ruin your life?
Yeah, tell your story that on the radio when we get back. How you ruined your life.
How it ruined my life. Bizarrely,
why you haven't been sectioned by the National Health for it yet.
It's only a matter of time, Mike. Every time I hear a knock at the door, I worry. before I actually got into libertarianism, for some reason, like, I ended up getting there sort of via sort of maybe not so conventional route, if you want to put it that way, because I'd always kind of been into stuff like the occult and things like that.
Are read we in a lot break?
About it.
Yeah,
no.
We're in a break, right?
No, we're not.
No, we're talking.
No, okay. I can't tell anymore. I don't even know anymore. Oh, I'm not supposed to be on. I'm supposed to be secret.
You're supposed to just be scrutinizing.
Yeah, sorry. Have a good show. Bye.
Thanks, Michael.
Oh, that was funny.
That's my secret chopper sound check. Yeah.
Such a unique show.
I love
but,
it.
I'd been into the occult and things. This is weirdly how I got to libertarianism, bizarrely. And for some reason, I'd met up with a local chapter of the Ordo Templi Orientis. I've mentioned that before, or the OTO. And I was involved with them and stuff. And then some people had showed me some conspiracy websites, and I'd mostly kind of looked at it to laugh about it, because a lot of the stuff about the OTO that was on these websites was wildly inaccurate, like crazy inaccurate. And it was kind of just a bit of a laugh. But then I started, you know how there's some sort of conspiracy stuff that verges on liberty stuff, if you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
You have liberty podcasts that have a conspiracy bent, or someone, a guest on, who's got a conspiracy theory or something like that. And then for some reason, I started to find the conspiracy theories interesting, but I never really bought into it. But I was fascinated by all these kind of, you know, New World Order and all this kind of stuff. And I wanted to look into it. But then I started getting a bit of a dose of this kind of libertarian stuff. And I'd always considered myself to be kind of on the left, a sort of socialist, if you want to. Nah, fair enough, I was a socialist, right? I always considered myself to be like that. But then, like, once this liberty stuff came in, it was weird. There was shows like, I don't listen to this particular show anymore, but I used to listen to Red Ice Radio from Sweden in the old days. And this word libertarian came up a few times. They had people like Stefan Kinsella on. They had Walter Block on, right? And we're now at a place where I've interviewed Walter Block twice, and I think he's great. But when I first heard him on that podcast, I was horrified. I couldn't believe this guy. I was like, are you joking? This man is a monster. This man needs to be banned. I could not believe it. He was talking about privatizing everything, and I thought, he's nuts. But then there was little bits of it. I was kind of going, well, that bit kind of makes sense. I could see where he's coming from. And then it was after quite a while and a lot of reading that stuff started to sort of sink in more. But I don't know why. It's funny, like, how it was started off with the occult and then sort of moved into conspiracy and then ended in libertarianism.
it seems to have worked out. You know, I'm kind of glad. Now, do those other topics still interest you, or did that stuff not really stick?
I mean, it still interests me. I mean, I still like to jammer on about spirituality to anyone that'll listen. You know, I'm not like a, let's get this straight, I'm not any kind of devil worshipper or anything like that, right? Let's get that rather straight. Not at all. So that stuff has always kind of stuck with me. I mean, I'm not an active member of the OTO anymore, but, you know, I have things, mementos from the OTO, that's the best way to put it. And I still wouldn't tell anything about any of the things, the rituals, the initiations. I would never tell a soul, I never have. So there's that kind of thing that does sort of stick with me. The conspiracy stuff, I love a good conspiracy theory. You know, I think some have legs more than the others. I like the Titanic one for some reason.
Oh, what's the Titanic one? I want to hear about this.
Well, after the break, I'll explain the Titanic conspiracy theory to you.
It was an inside job, right?
It never sank.
Whoa!
I know.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Squisklar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Pipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch. Now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's fiendphone.com. FeenPhone.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Adding dogs and eyes to my nightmares. Do you guys know about this?
No. Tell me. Can you tell me about it? Because I've been seeing people's pictures that people post. I don't really understand how it works.
And there's nightmarish dogs and eyes into food and landscapes and porn. Yeah, it's Google invented this software called Deep Dream. If you Google Deep Dream on Google Images, you'll see thousands of things people have used it for. It takes pictures. I'll use it, a picture that Jim Jesus did of me in this software that I may just use for the, I may just use this for the Fiends all the time picture now. You know, it's that one with me talking to the hamster on the microphone. It's like the hamster in my brain. Well, now it's like the satanic dog hamster in my brain, and my brain has dogs and eyes coming out of it.
How do you use this? How can I insert an image into this thing?
I think you have to upload it and then like go to sleep, and like it takes like 8 hours. It's a complicated algorithm and lots of render time, and it supposedly has something to do with like the way that AI network, like neural networks work in the human brain. It doesn't just randomly add dogs and eyes. It simulates dreaming and it makes decisions. And it's really weird, man. It's creeping me out. I like it.
I just found a headline because I Googled it. Google Deep Dream adds dogs and eyes to photos.
That's about like what every third article about it says, because that's pretty much what it does. But look at some of the pictures. They're pretty cool, man.
Interesting. Why is it dreaming about dogs and eyes? I guess that's
I don't know. Maybe that's most of what people dream about.
Maybe that's what most of what Google is used for.
Yeah, like dogs and eyes. Yeah.
Weird. it's weird. Anyway, more visual humor for the radio, right?
Yeah, I'm going to send you guys. Well, people listening on the interwebs later will see what I uploaded, but I'm sending it to you guys now. It's the new official Freedom Fiends logo. I'll actually put this in the MP3s too when I tag the MP3s.
Nice.
It's so weird, man. All right. Have a good evening, guys. Thanks. Take care. Bye.
Thanks, Michael.
Bye. That is weird, that software. I don't need photo editing software that's inside my brain.
You know, I guess it's kind of a neat concept. I got to learn more about it. I've been wanting to do a little research and try to figure it out. But dreaming computers, that's always sort of been the, you know, like a spooky sci-fi topic, right? It's becoming reality. What if like the like U.S. government drones start dreaming? Like that could go bad, right?
I could go very badly. That's the whole thing. You start, it gets creepy. You know, it comes an uncomfortable position when you think, like, how much can robots really become like humans before the line's too blurred and it all becomes a bit strange, you know, like the whole transhumanism sort of thing is, it's, I don't know, it's a kind of scary concept to me.
I think it's pretty fascinating. And, you know, we're probably, you know, generations away from some really weird stuff in that field, right? I mean, what don't they talk about, like, a singularity, that the time when, like, you know, perhaps your consciousness could be just copied over into a computer and, like, you could keep a backup copy of yourself?
Oh, yeah, I heard stuff like that. I watched that documentary, Transcendent Man, about Ray Kurzweil. And, I mean, he works for Google just now, or he did at some point, but I know that he's massively rich, but he's really into this transhumanism thing. But a lot of what I got from him in that documentary, it sounded to me like he was really, really scared to die. And it's like his dad had died when he was younger, and he actually still had all his dad's personal effects and stuff, all his things kept in, like, storage, because he seemed to believe that maybe in the future, through technology, he could, like, recreate his dad. And it seemed like, just to me, I mean, I'm not a psychiatrist or anything, but I don't really think it takes one in this instance, to be honest, because it seemed like he had real issues surrounding death, and it's like he's putting so much money in that and into trying to fight it, you know, and he's ultimately fighting something that can't be fought. I mean, there's nothing more absolute than a corpse,
you know? Right. But, you know, ahead of time. And you know, there's really, I mean, there's nothing that, I mean, the brain is incredibly complicated, but it's only mysterious because we can't really see every cell and map every neuron and every connection and every synapse and every gap, right? Mm-hmm. But there's nothing technologically preventing those things from being measured precisely and duplicated, is there?
I don't know. I wonder. I mean, I don't know how it would work exactly. I mean, would it be like in Futurama, where you've got heads and jars and things, or like, or would someone be a program? You know, would maybe your dead mother now exist on a laptop somewhere? I mean, it might be handy to close it and open it when you feel like it, but it would just be, you know, like, maybe this is just my ignorance, but it just, I don't know, it seems to me like it's an interesting concept, but it seems to me like there's a lot of denial of, like, death as a natural part of life, which it is. And, you know, just accept that there's a reason why things live and die. It's, you know, we're not supposed to be around forever, surely. Is that just me?
Well, you make a good point, but there's always, you know, there's always people that are going to challenge that. They're always going to be, like, thinking. I mean, look at all the sci-fi literature on the topic, where people have, you know, created robot bodies for themselves. And it's not just about artificial. I mean, if you could create an artificial intelligence in a computer, perhaps you could map the human intelligence and put that into a computer as well. Who knows?
I mean, does that mean, like, then you wouldn't have to study? You could, like, download knowledge, you know? Do we go there? I mean,
it's the Matrix. It's the Matrix.
I mean,
or are you a fan of the classic Star Trek?
No, I've never seen it, to be honest.
You've never seen Captain Kirk and Spock?
Never. I'm aware of what it is and who they are, but I've never seen it, ever.
There's a classic episode called Spock's Brain, okay, where these people have to steal Spock's brain to run their city. But the people themselves aren't that smart, so they go to this machine that, like, inserts the knowledge about how to transplant a brain. And it gives them this knowledge. So, yeah, inserting memories. And, of course, that's what The Matrix was all about.
Yeah.
Oh, gee, you want to learn martial arts? Here, boom. What do you want to learn next?
But then, I wonder how that would be. Like, would surely not everyone would get that kind of, you know, would get that, would just be able to download knowledge in that way. Because, I mean, I've heard some people make the prediction that, like, transhumanism in the start, it could be, you know, certain people who have power and influence could have access to it, and certain people who are poorer might not, which could mean that you could end up having almost two races of human at one point.
Or sure,
you could just
why
have
not?
People that don't want to be involved in it and people that do want it, you know, even if everyone had access to it, and then that could split two groups of people completely against each other. So technically you've kind of got two races. You've got, like, well, two species, if you want to put it that way. You've got, like, a robot human versus a normal human. I kind of think
now,
the robot
would they both have their own sports teams?
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, that could be really interesting at the riot, right? Like, how's that going to play out?
It'd be great. You'd have robot pride rallies and things like that, you know.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't want to see the robot the robot riot.
I'll stay away from that one myself.
That could go very badly. Yeah, they're like, you know, they get really excited and start, like, you know, blowing up, like, nuclear reactors and antimatter bombs, and hey, let's burn the entire atmosphere of the planet. Woohoo!
They kind of, in that show Futurama, they sort of did that, didn't they? They made the robots out to, like, sort of, like, a lot of them to just be like us, you know, like, and, like, it's like a lot of them, like, absorbed our kind of, you might say, vices, you know, like,
oh, yeah,
and sort of pornography and stuff like that.
Oh, I love Futurama. I love the what they came up with for the robot culture with their religions and the robot devil and, man.
That's the thing. I mean, like, you know, would that exist with an artificial intelligence? You've kind of got to wonder. I mean, even that show Red Dwarf sort of explored things like that in a way. You know, they had, I don't know if you ever saw, did you ever see that BBC show Red Dwarf?
Never saw that.
So they had, like it was like they were formerly on a spacecraft, but the only people that survived were, like, one human, a robot, a hologram of one of the dead crew members, and then the other one was a being that had evolved from the ship's cat. So it gave a kind of interesting context on the whole thing.
Hey, you can't say it's like, oh, that's been done, right? That is a little bit of a different premise, at least.
Absolutely. I think it was the 80s it started, actually. I recommend that to anyone who's never seen Red Dwarf, if you like sci-fi.
I'll have to check that out. Yeah. But Futurama, like, of course, the pinnacle of sci-fi, in my opinion, but I'll explore other things.
See, what I loved about Futurama was, a lot of the time, see how they, like, would get history wrong, and it makes you wonder, like, how much history we get wrong, because they would do things like, I remember there's one where they're in, like, a museum, and it's like Jackie Gleason, isn't it, saying to the moon Alice, and they think that he was the inspiration for people traveling to the moon, and he must have been someone important.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it makes you wonder, because we have all these theories about history, but we don't really know. It makes you wonder how badly off we probably are.
Pretty bad. I think really bad.
That's why you get all these, like, alternative theories of history and stuff, and then you have people shouting pseudoscience at one another, and nobody really knows, to be honest. We're all sort of guessing.
Speaking of, you were going to tell me the theory about the Titanic and how it didn't sink. Yeah.
Never sank.
No, what happened to it?
There was a book that came out called by Robin Gardner called The Titanic, The Ship That Never Sank. And basically he makes the argument. There was a kind of cheesy documentary version made that was on YouTube at one point. And it's basically, he says it was for an insurance scam, because the older ship they had, that was called the Olympic, was almost identical to the Titanic in every way apart from a few details.
Right.
And so the idea was, send out the Olympic will sink. Insurance money. I can tell you a little more about where he gets that from after the break, and we'll actually do it this time.
Okay, yeah, we're definitely doing that.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Tension in the third act. For some reason, we're talking about the Titanic conspiracy theory. You hadn't heard this one, had you, James?
Evidently not. I mean, I've heard some pretty crazy conspiracy theories. I even have people on my Facebook page trying to convince me that the Earth is flat and it's a NASA conspiracy. I swear to God. So nothing really surprises me. But so now run this by me again. It was a big insurance scam. What was it?
Yeah, well, it's right, I don't necessarily believe in this. It's just because there's people that have refuted some of his claims. But there was a book written called The Titanic, The Ship That Never Sank by Robin Gardner. And he basically, the main crux of his argument was this. There was two ships that White Star Line owned, the older ship, the Olympic, and the younger ship, the Titanic. Now, the two ships were apparently quite identical, apart from like certain differences in spacing with windows and things like that. So his theory is that, you know, they were in some financial trouble and things like that. They decided they were going to sink the Olympic, but a ship nearby, I think it was the Californian, would be around and would be able to rendezvous and pick up the passengers. But they would obviously have claimed it was the Titanic and, you know, they would claim the insurance money. Now, he's got all this evidence as to how that could be done. Like, he explained how working conditions were different and it wouldn't have been that difficult at that time to get a small group of workers to make certain minor adjustments, like to the signage and things like that, to switch the ships, you know, by threatening them or paying them off.
I guess I don't understand the advantage. Was it because the ship they sank wouldn't have been, like, fully finished? Yeah. Or why would it be cheaper to sink that the Olympic and not the Titanic? I don't get it.
Oh, the Olympic had already sailed and things, and it was apparently in bad need of repair.
Okay.
So it would actually have been advantageous to them to just, you know, to say it was the Titanic that sank and collect the insurance money, and that way they get rid of the Olympic as well, this old ship. So that was the kind that, you know, they get rid of the ship and they get some money for it. It seems like not a bad idea. So that was the whole kind of crux of it. But, like, you know, he brought in a lot of things like that. But some people have said that the builder's documents, you know, could prove that they're not the same ship. Although in the documentary version, there's this bit at the end where one of the, like, the letters is sort of coming off the Titanic in a shot of the actual wreck as it was when they filmed it. And it looked like there's writing underneath it that could say Olympic. So, you know, you never know. But it just looks like, it's one of these things where it looks like it could look like anything, you know, but it kind of seems that way. But it's,
hey, I'll go with that.
Interesting ones.
Why not?
I mean, who knows? There's all that. There's stuff to do with the Federal Reserve. I mean, some people say that JP Morgan was in on this. That's another strand of it. And that certain people who were on the Titanic were opposed to like the Federal Reserve. So it was advantageous for him because no, JP Morgan was supposed to be on the Titanic, but he cancelled at the last minute.
Well, right. It was out on a geoengineering mission. It was spreading chemtrails across the ocean, and something went wrong.
There's all these different things that people bring in. It's funny how one conspiracy theory starts as one thing, and then they go, ah, but this person was on it, so they must have been up to no good. And then, you know, and then it's suddenly you're sitting in a room with, like, string all over the walls connecting different photos and pentagrams going, there's a connection here somewhere. I'm just not sure what it is.
Did those happen in real life, or are they just, like, only in poor TV shows? Like, does anybody really figure that's like really think about something and start putting like pictures on a bulletin board and strings?
I want to believe that people do that.
You know what? We should try that. I think if next time I have some like big problem to solve, I'm going to like pull out string and photos and a bulletin board and see if it works. And a map, right? And newspaper article. It's always newspaper headlines too, like from 1953. Here's a headline, you know, like.
Yeah, like I love that. But the thing is, now it's like all on a computer. It takes all the fun away from it.
Yeah.
I like conspiracy theorizing the old-fashioned way. I see in my room covered in newspaper headlines.
You're just a classic conspira. What are they? Conspiracist? What word am I looking for?
How about just go with conspiracy theorist? Is conspiracist a word?
Okay, conspiracy theorist. Okay. Classic style. Dan Green.
Yeah. Old school style.
Old school.
I stand on the street corner shouting instead of on YouTube.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to say that the Federal Reserve did it. Whatever your conspiracy is, I'll just go ahead and say, yep, they probably did do that.